All right, everybody. It has continued. I'm continuing on talking to the people that I find interesting, that I enjoy the most, and I know you too will enjoy these folks, mostly because they're awesome. And you've also heard this gentleman on the show before, another broadcaster like myself, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Billy Dees.
How is everyone doing this evening? I hope you're doing absolutely fantastic.
You know, this has just been an interesting time, because I was listening to your program right before we got on, and it was you know, because you do interviews as well, and also you do solo shows.
Yes.
And because I do both, I don't necessarily think that it's, I don't find it uncomfortable at all. I find it just as I'm just as comfortable doing either one. Do you have a preference between the two?
Well, certainly they both have their advantages. For a while there, I was tempted to split off the solo shows with another identity, calling it something else. But as it turned out, in the process of that a couple of years ago, my audience was always trying to find me. Well, he's doing an interview today, so he's over here, and then he's over here for this other thing. And it just got to the point, why make the audience search, you know, out different shows? So no matter what I do now, I put it on, you know, the Billy Dees podcast, whether it's an interview, whether it's a solo commentary of some kind. And a lot of the podcasts that I produce for other people, sometimes people want it on there, sometimes they don't, which is fine. It's their preference. But I think I really like the interviews. I'm a communicator, and I enjoy talking to people. I believe that's very important, and listening is a big part of that, which is something that is really has been a lost art. By the same token, I feel the commentaries, because of the fact that I really enjoy professional audio, and I enjoy audio only as a medium. I really, as a communication medium, I find the spoken word is an art form. And when you're doing spoken word with a professional microphone, your voice is going directly into someone's ear. It's even with video, there's a certain amount of distance involved. And with audio, you have to convey whatever it is you are talking about through your ability to speak, how you choose words, how you enunciate, how you put emphasis on certain syllables versus not. And I believe that's a big part of podcasting. I'm very excited about the fact that it has renewed audio only as a storytelling, communication type medium. With that being said, I've kind of find it odd that a lot of people who have jumped on the podcasting bandwagon are simply just stripping the audio off of their YouTube videos or something like that and throwing it on some podcasting platform. And to me, that's not what a podcast or an audio only program is. But for those that do it and do it well, I'm very glad that the medium has given new life to that. I every once in a while will get offers to do audiobooks. I haven't accepted one. That's a lot of work. I mean, that is a lot of tedious work. Mm-hmm. But here again, that's another medium now that has given new life to voice artists. So I'm very excited about that. So both of those dynamics are something that I enjoy very much.
Yeah, I have a similar experience to what you were just referring to, and I purposely separated them.
Yes. And that's fine.
Yeah, and the funny thing about it was I thought that there would be a lot of crossover between the two audiences, and no. It's like, I mean, there is some crossover, but I feel like a guy that has two families.
Yeah.
You know, and and let me slide across town to do my interview family really quickly. I hope they don't hope the other family doesn't get upset with me because I'm gonna slide across town.
And, yeah,
that's what.
Well, that's interesting that you have two distinct audiences. You know, and that's great if that works. You know, everybody has to find their own niche in terms of how they're marketing themselves, how they're getting their program out there, and that's very interesting. You can almost, you know, kind of adopt like an actor. You can adopt two different personas mm-hmm. that way. So that's cool.
The thing I've noticed, though, is especially when you're referring to the people that do the video podcast and strip out the audio, if I ever actually did video, I would still tell stories exactly the same way, knowing that there's going to be some people that prefer the audio component. It's like if you record a stand-up comedy album, yeah, and you're a physical comic, you know, Marcel Marceau's album would be horrible.
Yeah.
I hear a lot of clapping, but I don't know what the hell's going on. At this party, he's making a flower with his fingers. Oh, okay.
Yeah. That's interesting. Let me qualify that. I think that if you're doing a podcast and you just happen to have video on it and you're still doing audio as a priority, you're not, for example, like you said, doing something very visual that requires the medium of video. I don't necessarily have as much of an issue with that. Mm-hmm. What I have an issue with is a lot of the TV stars now who have cable news programs and other things, and they're starting their quote-unquote podcast, and they just simply take the audio out of what they're doing with TV and throwing it on there. Mm-hmm. To me, that's not you know, audio content. It's kind of like a simulcast. Mm-hmm. And here again, there's nothing necessarily quote-unquote wrong with it. That's not what I'm saying. But what I am saying is when you create content for the audio-only medium, you're putting in a different emphasis on how you're speaking. It's a different style of communication. And I think I try to preserve as much of that as possible in podcasting. But you can't ignore the video element. I mean, Joe Rogan and all these people, you can't argue with the fact that video is now becoming a component of podcasts. So,
First of all, you're too diplomatic. You're too nice. You're too professional. Let me just say what I think. They stink. Okay.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's certain things that I don't mind. Essentially, if I get an opportunity to, like if I'm driving someplace, if I'm walking, I'm jogging or something like that, and I want to listen to the Rachel Maddow show or some news program or something like that, or, you know, or CNN, whatever news program is on, just using those as an example, I like the fact that I can listen to it, because quite frankly, if you put your phone in your pocket when you're doing YouTube, your hip is going to, why am I listening to this Metallica song all of a sudden? Oh,
yeah. Yeah.
You know, unless you do Spotify or something like that. And
sure.
But I a lot of podcasters that I talk to, because I've talked to a lot of podcasters, obviously, for this specific month, off the air, a lot of people that I talk to, whether it's on a show or not on the show, some of them have been obvious. It's just regular conversations with podcasters, mm-hmm, and people of that. Man, there's a lot of people that are like, what? And I don't blame them. It's like you see a lot of people that have 5 television programs already.
Yeah.
You know, and then they're like, and now my podcast, because I was watching something now, and it's like a bunch of UFC fighters with their own podcast interviewing their friends, you know.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's kind of like the, you know, the hot thing to do right now. Mm-hmm. And I kind of believe, I don't know if I have statistics to back this up, but my guess is that podcasting is kind of going through what blogging went through 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody had to have a blog. Everybody had to have, you know, some kind of a thing where they were talking about what they were doing and all these other things. And then as time went on, the people who were doing it because it was the hot thing to do kind of fell off. Mm-hmm. And the people who remained are very good. I mean, they rival what a lot of journalists are doing. Mm-hmm. And I think that's going to happen with podcasting. You and I have been in the business for a long time. Mm-hmm. A lot of these people who are coming on because it's the quote unquote thing to do, and just throwing their content on there from other things. You know, that thing is hot right now, but I think as time goes on, you know, here again, those will fall off and the cream will kind of rise to the top and you'll have a stabilization. The one thing that I am concerned about is now that big money is really involved in what's going on, you have these multi-million dollar contracts and all these other things. Mm-hmm. The one thing that does concern me, excuse me, is that podcasting is going to become what radio is. You know, they're the same 3 or 4 companies own almost every radio station in the country. Mm-hmm. And they all play the same music. The commercials sound the same. The promos sound the same. Everything sounds the same. The songs that they're playing are all the same. And I just hope that doesn't happen with podcasting. I think you have to take the good with the bad. I think the big stars like Dr. Phil and all these other people, they bring in an audience that may not have been there before. Mm-hmm. A lot of people might have said, maybe I can listen to them on here. What's this? So they bring a lot of people to the medium, but you just have to be careful that to be heard, that to have a successful program, you're not competing with all these big companies all the time who are driving the analytics for the money. So you have to kind of take the good with the bad, and that can be a difficult mix to balance.
Well, I would just like to say to Spotify and Apple and all of these companies that may be coming into the space and dominating and handing out lots of money, to hell with Billy D's. I think you guys are awesome. And I don't blame you. I don't know what he's talking about personally. I think it's incredible. And I think you're going to do a great job. I'm sorry, man. I got to take care of myself.
I got
to protect myself. No offense.
Sure.
You know what I was curious?
I understand.
You know what I was curious about, though? Because you do a similar thing. We're in a similar genre, I guess, interviews and doing solos.
Yeah.
Do you get, and this is something that I found, and it took me a while to process it, because does your emails or your interactions with the audience between the interviews and the solo podcast, do you get a different type of response, or is it just the same type of response for both?
I'm going to say that they're very similar, only because I try to have a well-balanced approach to anybody that I'm talking to or any subject that I'm covering. Mm-hmm. The one thing that I try not to do, and I can't imagine myself doing it, is being one of these, a political rant type show where I'm either a conservative or I'm a liberal and I'm saying how bad the other people are and how good and sanctimonious we are. That's not something that I feel there's way too much of that, way too much. It's out of control now. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I tell my audience, I preface a lot of my commentary with, I'm going to try and take you in a direction that you may not expect. You know, when a certain subject breaks open, I know exactly what Rachel Maddow is going to say about it. I know exactly what Sean Hannity is going to say about it. I don't need to tune into their shows. I know exactly what the talking points are going to be. And I try not to be predictable. I try to maybe go in an area that nobody ever considered. And that's kind of my niche. And I do that with the interviews, and I do that with the commentary. And so I kind of hope that approach, that brand, maybe that's a good word, mm-hmm. the brand that I bring in myself is consistent. And that's kind of, so yeah, I would have to say that generally speaking, I haven't got a whole lot of extreme comments. It happens occasionally, but I don't get that too much.
Yeah. And I'll be honest with you. I mean, on one show, I just tell weird stories. That's the original one. And on this one, mm-hmm. The thing about it is occasionally you run across a guest that has specific views, you know, or you'll be talking to a guest where you don't even think, you're not even thinking you're going to be going in that direction. But yeah, you know, and you had an interesting childhood. But the president sucks. You're like, oh my God.
Yeah.
How do we get into that? How do we get into that?
That can be, in my point of view, a lot of times publishers hire me to, to interview people. Mm-hmm. And they, it's put on their website. And there was a political book. I don't know if I should. The title of the book was I'm Sick and Tired of White Guys was the book. And it was a comedic book. And these mm-hmm. guys were, of course, liberals. And they had gotten some flack. I believe it was in USA Today or something like that. There was a post about it, and a lot of the right, was coming at them. The different websites and the different things was really coming at them. And they told me, you got to be prepared. You might get some of this heat. So I was kind of, this is going to be kind of fun, but one of the things that I did tell them was I have to walk a line of I want to promote your book. And it's a comedy book, and I understand that. I'm not going to do a 60-minute style interview, but if I just let you roll over all of your points, the interview has to have some teeth. So I have to, I have to throw in a few zingers in there. I have to make you defend your position, or otherwise it becomes you know, an infomercial. It's just nothing but a 30-minute commercial for your book. And that's not going to be what the audience wants. So I had to strike that balance. I had to give the interview some teeth, but at the same time, I had to remember that this was something that was designed to promote their book. So that was an interesting line to walk. And I didn't get any negative comments. I was hoping for the hate. I told my wife, you know, they apparently hit some death threats and some other things. I told my wife, I said, you know, be prepared for anything. What's going to happen? But, you know, to my disappointment, I didn't get too much. They did. All the comments were directed at them. Somehow or other, they shot past me. I don't know how that was possible. But, yeah, so you kind of have to give that. You know, you have to let them have their say, but you have to keep it within a certain parameter, because you don't want it to become so overwhelmingly, a driven message that it turns off the audience.
Yeah, it's really, really interesting, because I remember when I listened to radio when I lived in Los Angeles, there was a lot of talk radio, and they were actually everybody that I listened to was actually very, very good broadcasters. Mm-hmm. Whether I agreed with them or not, they were just really good broadcasters, so much so that even if they had a different political view than you, they weren't so hard to a specific wing, you know, left or right wing. They mm-hmm. weren't so harsh. And so you could actually enjoy the humor. And then all of a sudden, it just, hey, today's show, the opposite side stinks and their mothers are ugly. Right back after this message. And then they would you know, you couldn't, and sometimes you couldn't even listen to people that necessarily had your specific point of view, because they were so angry all the time.
Absolutely.
And not even on subjects where there was, you know, not even the hot button subjects. I don't like the way he ate ice cream. I knew he was evil. You know, he's like, wait a minute, you know.
Well, you know, that can be a tough one, because if, you know, we're in the business of essentially ratings, our ratings are clicks or, you know, mm-hmm. listens. And the what I would call a well-balanced audience is getting harder to find. For example, Bill Maher. I've been a fan of his for a long time. Now, that does not translate into I agree with everything he says. Mm-hmm. I probably disagree with him as much as I agree with him. But I have always found his approach, his logic, and his humor to be very good. Now, he has been criticized by the left lately, saying that he is moving right. And actually, as someone who has followed him for 20 or 30 years, I can tell you that Bill Maher hasn't moved. His position on the scale in terms of liberal is about the same place. What has changed is there's been a massive shift to the extreme left, to the point where he has been passed. Mm-hmm. And the same thing has happened on the right. You know, if you look at the most traditional conservatives that you can come up with, whether it be Ronald Reagan or Barry Goldwater, or any of those old-time conservatives, they had conservatism as a overriding principle, you know, a general philosophy, but they lived in the real world. Mm. Reagan raised taxes. He said, we have to do something with, you know, the illegal immigration. We have to have a path for citizenship. He said all of these things. And today, conservatives would burn him at the stake for saying those things. Mm-hmm. And what used to be on the, like, 5% of the fringes of the left and right is now getting larger. It's 10, it's 15, it's 20%. And you're either for me or you're against me. You know, I can list off 10 things and 9 of them you might agree with me on, but that one thing sounds conservative or the other way around, and I'm done. You'll never listen to me again. And I don't, from a broadcasting standpoint, how do you keep your audience? You know, I know that CNN has been criticized and Fox as well for having these political slants to a lot of their commentary. But the fact of the matter is that audience isn't there. The Walter Cronkite audience, that's the way it is today. That's how you always used to close, or words to that effect. And that's the way it is. People don't want to know that. What they want to hear is what feeds what they've already determined. They want to know what feeds their ideology. They want someone to cheer for how they feel on issues. They don't want to hear opposing opinions. They don't want to have their views challenged. And when you had to sit through the 6 o'clock news as it was presented 30 or 40 years ago, you had to hear it the way you liked it or not. But now there's so many places you can go, this news you can use type thing, which basically means news that you want to hear. has really done, and it's on social medias too. Everybody's on in these bubbles. I feel it has done very bad things for what was once referred to as the common wisdom of the general public. That has really suffered. And we don't have an informed public anymore. And there's a real juggernaut to that because everybody points at the media and says, well, that's because of the media. But the fact of the matter is the media is doing that because that's how they get an audience. Otherwise, nobody would listen to the Walter Cronkite news in 2021. Nobody would. That would be boring. Mm-hmm. That would be something that, you know, it just wouldn't fly today. And I'm not sure what we can do about that. But the bubbles and the false realities that were once on the fringes are now becoming the platforms for political parties. Mm-hmm. And it's a very dangerous time in terms of how our society is processing information and making their decisions.
I would just like to warn you, I would like to say to you, Billy, metaphor alert, here I come, metaphor alert, here it comes. I like to chew my own food.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yes, absolutely.
I don't need somebody to chew it and spit it into my mouth, mm-hmm. which is yep. basically, you know, which is basically what you get it on the news, because I am old enough. You were referencing 30 and 40 years ago. 30 years ago, oh God, I feel like a thousand, I'm a thousand.
I know how you feel.
30 years ago, I was an adult.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you.
30 years ago, I was 22 years old. And so I remember Walter Cronkite. Obviously, I was a kid back then, but I remember.
Oh, yeah, me too.
Yeah, because we were roughly the same age, right? So yeah. I remember that. And I remember 3, 6, and 10 in, ABC, NBC, CBS. I can't say 3, 6, and 10 because that was Philadelphia.
Yeah, 3, 5, and 8 was here in Ohio. Yep.
Yeah, so you know what I mean? So essentially everybody was watching the same television programs. I remember watching television. You know, you have your parents sitting on the couch, and then I had my sister, this was before my brother was born. Mm-hmm. My sister and I would sit on we would sit on the steps. That's prime annoying each other and hitting each other in the arm territory.
Sure.
And watching the same programming. And then she's only a few years younger than me. As we became teenagers, all of a sudden now you got the UHF station started to spring up, mm-hmm. you know, so now there he's watching that, she's watching that, I'm watching, and everybody's in their own rooms watching TV. And so I wasn't watching the same thing my sister was watching, and she wasn't the same thing I was watching, and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
And we have the extreme version of that on the internet, because now it's not 6 stations, and obviously cable's hundreds of stations. Now you have infinite stations, and essentially the echo chamber driven by algorithms, because they want to do anything to keep you watching.
If you're glued. Yep.
And so it's like, and I'm sitting there going, you know, like I said, I like to chew my own food. I don't need you. I mean, I need you to, you know, give me some stuff that I like. But I mean, if you do me a favor, just half stuff I like, half I like, and half just random things so I can see what's going on there.
Sure.
And that's one of the things that kind of took the social media for me. And it used to be just fun because, like, hey, this is great. I have access to all of this. And it took most of the fun out of it and turned it into merely a tool. I know how to use it now, because obviously I've been on it forever, but I know how to use it to the point where I can find different things. As soon as I see them trying to echo chamber me, I immediately just, nope, nice try.
Yeah.
You know, and sure. I slide out of the shackles they try to put me in, because I want opposing points of view. They say
Absolutely.
Steel sharpens steel. Well, Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, say for the sake of argument, you and I both really vehemently disagreed on something. I'm not going to get mad at you. Two things are going to happen. Both are going to be good. One, I'm going to find out I was wrong and I'm now better.
Mm-hmm.
Two, I'm going to find out I was right and I'm better.
Yep.
Those are the only two things that are going to happen unless you swing a bat at me or something.
Yeah. Well, another thing that can happen is that in the course of our discussion, the fact that I listen to you, you listen to me, mm-hmm. sometimes we can come up with a whole new conclusion. And that's mm-hmm. that's like the best thing ever. Mm-hmm. And that used to be what conservatives and liberals did in Congress back in the 1960s and 1970s. You know, they would come up with a reasonable solution. But now it's either my way or the highway. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're either with me or you're against me. And, you know, talking about the evolution of news, I did a commentary about this a while back. And the short version is that I believe what really changed everything, if you look at the history of broadcasting in the 1950s and the early 60s, news was a public service. Mm-hmm. Television stations kind of did it begrudgingly. It was something that they had to do for their FCC requirements, inform the public and all this. And they really weren't that into it. But the Kennedy assassination that weekend, everybody in America was glued to their TVs. And it occurred to somebody somewhere, you know what? We can sell a lot of cereal with this news stuff. And of course, the 1960s were chock full of major events. You know, within a few years, you know, Martin Luther King, Bobby Kennedy, and all these other people were assassinated. There was all these, the Vietnam War and the demonstrations in the streets and civil rights. And as the 1970s rolled around, when Watergate started to happen and the Watergate hearings were on TV, that's when a lot of the bloviating started. That's when a lot of these news anchors started to realize that they were talking to millions of people. And they started interjecting, commentary on top of the news. And as the 70s wore on, the explosion of cable in the 1980s, and of course the 90s, you saw, you know, major cable networks starting to emerge. And of course the internet and all the things involved with social media now right in the palm of your hand, is now news has become a source of entertainment, for lack of a better word. It's something to charge up the public. It's something to get them buying cereal. And I wish we could, you know, make a happy medium. I would like a part of news to be a public service. But here again, you can't make money doing that, because the public really, when it comes right down to it, they like their opinions fed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you're a broadcaster or even a podcaster and you're wanting for, you want a lot of listens, you have to walk that line of holding to a certain standard that you want to present. But at the same time, you have to be aware that people want an opinion. They want you to say something that's either going to fire them up or it's going to make you like them. And that's a very, it's a tough situation right now with the way the public consumes information. It's all you have to do is look through the tweets, look down through the tweets. Mm-hmm. Go to any major news site, look through the comments on that site. And these are the people that are voting. Mm-hmm. You know, these are the people that are affecting change. And it's scary. It really is.
You know what the funny thing, do you travel a lot?
I don't travel. Not lately. I haven't. No.
Okay. Now I'm a comedian, obviously. So.
Sure.
So what when you were talking about that, I was sitting there going, you know what? Audio, as we were speaking about earlier in this program, audio form podcast tends to be something that people can carry with them. You don't have to be staring at it.
Exactly.
You can just, it's passive, insofar as you don't have to be staring at it.
But correct.
But if you think about it, this is what I noticed. And I started noticing how this would happen. TV programs, you have to pay attention to them. You watch, back then, it'll be like Hunter or something.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You know, sure. You want to watch him. You want to look at Dee Dee McCall looking delicious, and you want to see him punch somebody in the face. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So you would have to watch the program. But I noticed when you turn on the television, especially back then, 90s, and you wanted to just have background noise, you didn't necessarily turn to the sitcom channel.
Yeah,
you turn to CNN or something like that, and there would be this loop of news in the background, and then something would happen, or somebody would blow up, or somebody would kill someone, or some celebrity would do something, and your head would snap around, and you'd sit there staring at it, and it was on this loop. The same thing with ESPN. Loop, same thing, yeah. same thing. And I think, essentially that was very similar to what's going on in the internet insofar as loop.
Sure.
Yep. Same thing. Because yeah. I noticed that a lot of the popular people on the internet, as you were saying, they have to be a little bit of a provocateur. Okay,
yes.
Okay. They don't have to be a provocateur. What I should say is it's easier to get the audience with that.
Yeah, it is.
And because I've seen people, I got stuck into this loop on YouTube. I was working out, and I was like, let me turn on YouTube so I could look at that while I'm doing it. And as each video played, it was essentially popular YouTubers, quote, exposing, unquote, exposing other popular YouTubers.
Oh my gosh.
Who were then going back and exposing them. So they're all, I'm sitting there going, it'd be the equivalent of, like, I have good neighbors. It'd be the equivalent of me just going out and trashing the other neighbors to the other neighbors. You know, John, yeah. John to the left in my I'm at 519. He's at 518. He's a dirty, rotten scoundrel, and he did this, that, and the other. What did they say, Anthony? Yep. Say, well, let me tell you something. He's a dirty, rotten scoundrel.
Yeah, exactly. Sure.
You know, and you know, it's like, what is that crap?
It has affected. I've had people tell me, you know, a lot of the award shows, like for the Academy Awards and all these other things, are down. And a lot of people say they've become politicized, which is an element to it. That is true. But another thing is, and I haven't heard a whole lot of people talk about that, what is considered celebrity has radically changed. I mean, if you look at, let's say, for example, if you are a certain age, if you're a really, really young millennial, or if you're in your late teens, early 20s, do you really know who Denzel Washington is, or do you care? Do you know who Brad Pitt is, or do you care? I could go on down the line, mm-hmm. but they probably know who Logan Paul is. Mm-hmm. They probably know who Charlie D'Amelio is. Mm-hmm. Okay, and I think the entertainment industry is really going to have to address that, because what constituted a star just a couple of years ago means virtually nothing to a new audience now. Means virtually nothing.
It's got to be scary to them.
Yeah, sure. And now with COVID, it's a double whammy, because getting people to sit in a dark room with a bunch of strangers isn't so easy now. And on top of that, how many people really find what's happening on the screen interesting, you know? And in comparison with what they have going on, like you described, right in the palm of their hand. And most of it is garbage. But that's and I don't want to make a blanket statement. There's some very talented people on YouTube. There's on TikTok, too. I've been on there lately. There are some people on there who are extraordinarily talented. Absolutely. But just like we said with the podcasting and the blogging and everything else, you know, there's a lot of crap that you have to filter through to get to that cream to the top. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't seem like talent is directly related to the people who become stars in those apps. Like I said, given a choice between Logan Paul and Charlie D'Amelio, would somebody rather meet of a certain age? Would they rather meet them, or would they rather meet Denzel Washington? Now, I know I'd rather meet Denzel. Mm-hmm. I would, but yeah. if you're 17, 18, 19 years old, you're going to want to meet somebody who's on TikTok and is cute and has got 5 million followers, you know? So it's a different world all the way together in terms of what's happening now in terms of entertainment online, news online. Things have really changed.
Yeah, it's very similar. It's like, I remember, like, well, nah, neither one of us was around for this. Mm-hmm. But this is way before both our time. But the old studio system, where they would basically find someone and just build them and sculpt them into a star and control their behavior. And to some extent, the old media still does that.
Yeah.
But if you go online and you have a good egg recipe and your cat comes up and licks it, and it gets and it gets 10 million views, and all of a sudden you have a million subscribers. Now, all of a sudden, you just became a celebrity.
Yeah.
From your house. Now, Denzel Washington didn't win 2 Oscars from his house.
You're right.
You know, James Dean didn't win it. He didn't, you know, shoot that film at his house. But you literally, with your phone, can turn into something. And people that are consuming content now tend to want things right the hell now.
Absolutely.
I am not going to the movie theater. I mean, I may go to the movie theater if James Cameron, like, the kids will go see James Cameron because they know there's going to be lots of special effects.
Yeah.
But they also have Netflix at the house.
Sure.
You know, because to be honest with you, I mean, I haven't been to the movie theaters in a while because, you know, I got Netflix and Hulu. And,
and that's a factor, too.
Yeah. And the screen's kind of big. So, but we're both at the same, you and I are both in a group, in an age group, where we're literally directly in the middle of two different tsunamis,
we're Generation X. We're right in the middle.
Yeah, we're right smack dab in the middle, which is a good thing in some ways, because even though I'm a lot older than a third of my audience, the young people still like what I do.
Sure.
And the older people, I'm their age, so they like what I do. And it's the same thing with what you're going, if you look at the demographics of your audience, you'd be surprised at how many young people are in there. And because this is what they like. They want to hear you, they want to jog, you know.
Sure.
So it's really an interesting thing to sit between the two and watch them, because they're arguing with each other and we're just kind of sitting between them like, oh, all right.
Yeah.
I mean, how many people are attacking us?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a little joke of mine. I always say Generation X. Nobody ever, we're the passed over generation because we really didn't do anything. No, the 80s were a good time.
Yeah, man, my 20s were the best.
Yes, me too. Yeah.
And 30s were pretty damn good too, but this, you know.
Yeah,
and sure. So, and it was really weird because I'm watching like the boomers and generation, what was it, the millennials are arguing with each other. And
they kinda blame everything. Yeah,
it's hilarious. And I'm going, y'all both idiots. Just calm down.
Yeah. Yes.
It's going to be okay. I'm sitting in the middle. I'm looking at both of you fighting, and then they, you know, because, you know, people are like, we just don't care. It's like, guys, it's not that big of a deal. It'll be all right. It'll be okay. You know, you like watching TV. You like watching stuff on your phone. Okay.
Sure.
Just you watch stuff on your phone. You watch stuff on the TV. His music sucks. Didn't your parents think your music sucked?
Yeah.
You know, so.
Sure. It's the same cycle.
It's going to be okay. You know, but I just get a really big kick out of that whole situation. Because I was listening to your show and you were talking about woke.
Oh, okay.
And that is another thing where, I mean, you just get, I'll put out something completely innocuous. At least I think it's innocuous.
Oh, sure.
And I don't really have any super duper views where my natural views don't set themselves up to be attacked.
Yeah.
But,
it doesn't take much.
I just got attacked today about something, and I was laughing hysterically because I'm going, you got that upset about that?
Yeah.
I can just imagine the guy drooling. I'm going, calm down.
Yeah. It doesn't take much to spark a controversy now. And I understand, like with so many other things, you know, the woke movement started with a lot of legitimate things, you know, whether it be gender, race, and a lot of other things, that they were very legitimate things. But it's just like with so many other things, they start to grow. And now they're actually causing a backward movement. You know, there's this, everybody has to wear a badge now. You know, I'm this culture, I'm this gender, I have this sexual preference, and we have a million different ways to divide each other up. And it seems like in a strange way, there's more segregation now than there was, you know, 50 years ago. And my message would be to people out there is, you know, we all have our differences. I think we need to respect each other's experiences. I think one of the worst things you can do is tell somebody, well, that doesn't really happen anymore. You know, we're past that. No. If somebody has experienced a negative treatment, whether it's due to their race, religion, gender, whatever, you have to take that as their truth, and you have to respect that, and you have to treat that situation in a way that you are empathetic. Okay. I believe that is very important. However, when the political movements pick these things up and run with them, they become badges. And when we talk about conservative versus liberal, and we talk about race, we talk about religion, we talk about gender, we talk about sexual preference, and we go on down the line here, what it boils down to is these are more or less costumes. We forget about the fact that we're all human beings, you know, and instead of coming up with all these different ways to define us, you know, we need to come together and realize we all have some basic needs. And it really doesn't take that much to make most people happy. Food, clothing, and shelter are pretty much what everybody needs. Everybody needs love, and everybody needs respect. And that's really what it boils down to. The rest of this stuff, for political reasons and for the reasons of ratings and getting attention and soapbox standing, all of these divisions now have really caused a lot of problems in our society. And for the you and I, like I said, we're about the same age. Mm-hmm. There have been times when I wasn't too sure what the future was going to bring, but this is the most nervous I've ever been. Mm-hmm. You know, and if you look at the election cycle over the last 10 years, it's the anti-vote that wins. I believe that when Mitt Romney ran against President Obama in 2012, that was the last year that people kind of voted for someone. People voted for Obama. People voted for Romney. Mm-hmm. And they weren't necessarily my favorite politicians, but they were both people who lived in the real world. They were both respectable men. I always felt that no matter who won that election, even President Obama said this, no matter who won that election, him or Romney, the country would have been in good hands. Mm-hmm. Okay. And what happened in 2016, Trump won largely on the anti-Hillary vote. Mm-hmm. And you have and this last election cycle, you can divide it up any way you want, but Biden largely won on the anti-Trump vote. Mm-hmm. So it seems like with all this division in our society, we can't really even decide who to vote for. We don't choose leaders. We just choose who we don't want in there. Mm-hmm. When you consider it that way, the amount of negativity involved in that, because what I just spoke of involves tens of millions of people. They're making their decision on who they hate. we don't choose leaders that inspire us anymore. Obama was probably the last president that really captured the country's attention in 2008. I believe Clinton did it in 92. Reagan did it in 1980. And that's been pretty much it. For the most part, we held our nose and voted for the other guy.
Yeah, it's really interesting because it's like, let's be honest, all three of them are rock stars.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're running against them, you're going to get your behind whipped. So yeah.
Sure.
So when you have the ability to do the job plus the rock star-ness, I like to coin terms, the rock star-ness, you're not winning that. But it's just, I was watching something. Like when you think about, say you're reading Shakespeare.
Yeah.
Okay. I read that in school, obviously. So
sure.
You look at the language that was used hundreds of years ago, and most of those words are gone or have merged into different words. And they say that maybe 1,000 years from now, all the words we're speaking right now, none of them will be here.
That's probably true.
They're all gone. And it's kind of a shame that in the past few years, one word was completely obliterated. It exists, but no one uses it, nor do they live by it. And that word is nuance.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, my God. Yes.
You know, I mean, you're trying to, it's like people won't even listen. People will headline you to death, not just in headlines actually on newspapers, but just in conversation. I was at an ATM next to a guy and I'm paying a bill. Because I was like, I'm not waiting until I go home. I'm going to do this at the ATM. Because when I go home, I'm going to sit down. I'm tired. And that's a weird thing to think. Hey, I'm going to pay this bill at this ATM. I was 20 minutes away from home, and I was like, screw it. The ATM is right there. And I'm going to do this right now. Guy next to me, and we're talking, blah, 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 blah. And I don't want to talk to the guy. Nothing against the guy. But I just wanted to go home. I was really tired.
Sure.
You know, performed, recorded a bunch of shows and all this kind of stuff. I just wanted to go home. And he's striking up a conversation, and I'm talking to him. And we're just having, and I'm going, you know, this is actually a fun conversation. It's only going to last 3 minutes, but this is fun. I'm enjoying this. And then right in the middle of it, he goes, you don't believe in that vaccine BS, do you? I'm like, what? Yeah. I was just telling you how, you know, you're right to be proud about your child playing, learning how to play the piano so fast. And then all of a sudden you turn, I said, dude, I'm not having this conversation.
Sure. I said, yeah, like, everything is a political football now, even health.
I was like, I even said to him, I go, we're sitting there. Oh, yes. Yeah, he said, what do you do? I do. I'm a talk show host. Oh, what about you? And I'm doing a comedian. And you do that. Oh, you work for that. Fantastic. Oh, your kids. Oh, that's great. It's great that the kids playing the piano. You don't believe in that. And his voice changed.
Yeah.
And hey, what's going to happen?
Yeah, they have this agenda that they're going to throw out there no matter what.
I said, dude, I'm not having that conversation. You take care of yourself. You know, because I'm going to sit there arguing with this dope. You know, and it's just amazing that when you try to have, I remember a long time ago, I was having a friend of mine was completely the opposite of me politically. This was obviously the 80s. Yeah. It was literally no problem because essentially our views just lean one way or lean the other way from the middle, lean left, lean right, whatever, you know. And now it's just like, it's like, what do you think is expanding faster? The universe or the fringes of the political parties? Because they're both shooting away.
Oh, yeah, absolutely they are.
I think it's a tight race on how fast they're expanding. Because it's just in the most amazing. It's to the point where you can't even enjoy. You can't even enjoy. It's like when you watch it. Say for the sake of argument, I grew up on when I was a kid. I used to spend summers with my grandmother, and my grandfather, and they loved watching certain TV programs and game shows and things of that nature. So I became a big fan of these personalities, a ton of them. And then you find out once the divide happened and the political parties just started running in opposite directions, and all of a sudden you see people that you loved on television, people who you know, when you think about them, you smile if you see them on a network show, and they just say some of these ridiculously vile things.
Yes.
And it's like, I can't even, it's like, and to the point, so much, even if you disagree with me, I can watch your show, but there were some things that was so vile coming out of their mouths, and you knew that that's how they really felt. And you know, I can't enjoy their content because of how far and how vicious they were in attacking other human beings. I just couldn't, and that disappoints me. You know, that's one of those things. It just disappoints me that's what we have to deal with and look at right now.
I totally agree. It's like I said, the climate out there in terms of how you have to communicate with people, whether it be for comedic purposes, informational purposes, political purposes, you have to appeal to an ideology. You have to champion a cause, and it's not the way that good information is processed. And I'm not sure what's going to turn it around.
I have to do that? Oh, okay. Well, then I'll just admit to something. Redheads, I hate them.
Yeah.
That was a joke for you, and also one of my best friends is his entire family looks like the logo for Wendy's.
Yeah.
His whole family, and I know he's going to hear this when this comes out, and I already know there's going to be a phone call. I'm going to pick up the phone, and there's going to be hysterical laughter on the other end of the phone because he knows I'm referencing him, and he gets the inside joke. But
I heard George Carlin one time. He said, "Here's something you don't see every day: a 6'4" Chinaman with red hair."
Well, maybe he doesn't. I know plenty of tall Asian redheaded guys. Nope.
Yes.
But well, let me ask you this: as a broadcaster, because you're a broadcaster, and you've been a broadcaster for a long period of time, and in my opinion, doing it at a high level because I enjoy what you do, my friend.
Oh, thank you, and likewise.
What do you actually? I mean, when you listen, when you just not just podcasting, obviously, but when you consume, because you're actually in the industry. When you consume just for, not for research, just for enjoyment itself, if you just go, I'm going to sit back, I'm going to eat this sandwich, these chips, the soda, whatever you eat. What do you consume? What do you like to, what do you watch?
You know, that's a good question. I go through phases. I generally like when I'm just, you know, like junk food. For in terms of programming, I'll just kind of flip the TV stations around and what's one, this one, Chicago Fire. I believe that's on tonight. You know, that's something that I'll watch. It's melodramatic. It's corny. It's predictable. But it's mindless stuff. And I want to be clear. Okay. I don't do that every night and I don't think it's a good idea, but the idea that we it's what we call in the mental health industry is you have to take a wellness break, you know, and there's so much stuff now that is inflammatory. The news is frightening, whether it be about COVID or whether it be about China's aggression or, you know, the Russian cyber bullying and cyber attacks and all these things. You hear all these things and it can wear you down. So, you know, when you have a chance to just veg out, and I think that you can waste a lot of time online and you can waste a lot of time watching TV, but by the same token, it's okay to watch one of those Netflix series and veg out for a weekend if you need to do it. You know, I haven't watched it yet. I've heard a lot of people tell me about this Schitt's Creek on Netflix. Oh,
I still haven't seen it.
I haven't seen it either, but everybody tell me you got to watch it. Mm-hmm. And there's a new season of Dexter, the serial killer. Mm-hmm. You know, that's something I might try to, consume. But as a whole, I'm going to say with social media, I sometimes will veg out on TikTok videos. And it's interesting because, if you, on a practical side, as a creator, it's almost like with tweets and Twitter, you have a certain character limit and you have to make a point using only a certain words. Mm-hmm. And it actually is a good exercise for writing. Mm-hmm. And the same goes with TikTok and these short little blasts of video. As a creator, you don't have a whole lot of time to set something up. Mm-hmm. You know, so I believe it's a good exercise to try and create those types of videos. It does the serious video work that you do, but that much better. You know, you can get something across visually or with content in a way that, you know, you might not have considered if you hadn't been spending some time on TikTok. And so I think there's a practical side of it, but there's also a mindless side of it. You know, I'll watch a girl in a bikini dance. Yeah, I don't have a problem with that. And that type of just mindless thing is good once in a while. And I enjoy all kinds of music, whether it be hip hop or hard rock. I enjoy them all. And I enjoy kind of like the classics, like Dr. Dre. That's somebody I always wanted to meet simply because, you know, you can fart into a microphone and he's going to make some beats out of it. You know, he's just incredibly talented. And one of my people that I always kind of wanted to meet just passed away within the last year or so, but Eddie Van Halen, you know, he was somebody that he didn't even know how talented he was in the beginning. He actually took different pieces of guitars and put them together because he couldn't afford one that would play the way he wanted to. And he didn't realize he was revolutionizing the instrument. You know, those kind of people fascinate me. And it doesn't really matter to me the genre, whether it's country or whatever it is. Yes, some music I gravitate to a little bit more than others, but I enjoy talented people. I enjoy watching talented people work. These are all things that I find from fulfillment with. I don't know if that answers your question or not, but you know, that's the kind of thing I enjoy.
Yeah, because it's an interesting. Yeah, I also just recently got on the TikTok and I can see. Because like that Vine thing when it was 7 seconds. I mean, that's OK, yeah. But TikTok gives you 15, 60 and 3 minutes.
That's correct.
So
yeah.
You.
Yeah.
You know, so it gives you because I still remember going on Twitter the first time in 2009 when it was 140 characters and it took me. You know, a few minutes to go, how am I going to get my thought into a sentence and a half? I mean,
Makes you work. Sure. Yeah.
But of course, by the end of the day, you know, you can figure out how to condense it to the point where you can say, I can put the Iliad and the Odyssey into a tweet now if I want to. You know, because I've been on this since 2009. It's like I always have characters left over. I could put emojis in there, but it's because I've been there for so long and I can think like a tweet. I can think like Facebook, and I now can think in TikTok because you know, once you've been online long enough, as soon as it takes you a few seconds to figure out the new media, and then just go bang, I understand it. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I understand what as far as the consuming of the TV. I watch a couple of shows. I shouldn't even say shows. Like a little bit of sports. I watch Law and Order SVU and the show that comes on after it with Chris Maloney, and then I'm the hell out of there.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, that's about it.
It's like, you know, I rarely, you know, I feel like an old guy because my day we had CSI Miami, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
yes.
You know,
well, you know, on TikTok, a lot of times they play the beginnings of old shows. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, the $6 Million Man has been coming up. And that beginning, that's one of the classic that still fires you up. You know, we can rebuild him. We can make him better than he was, you know. The one thing I will say about being an old guy looking back at those shows is that they sparked your imagination that would result in activity. Mm-hmm. You would go out in the backyard or run down the alley like you were running 50 miles an hour and you'd be jumping off stuff. I'm sure a lot of kids back then broke their ankle. Oh, yeah. Jumping, you know, but now, if that show was popular today, the kids would watch the show and go straight to the $6 million app and play the game. You know, there wouldn't be, it wouldn't translate into activity like it once did. And here again, I'm all about electronics. I'm not so much a gadget freak. I enjoy real technology like computers and stuff. And I do have, you know, I'm one of those people who get the latest phone. But I think that you have to have a balance for that. It seems like we go to that so much for our mental development. Children do. We go to it so much for information. We go to it so much for entertainment. And we really need to find a way to entertain ourselves and enjoy human interaction again. And that comes down to, you know, how we process information. We've been programmed to process information a certain way based on, and, you know, if you're of a certain age, you've been fed your entertainment, your information, your opinions about things through the little bubbles that you've created, depending on who you follow. And I just don't know if that's a good thing. I'm still trying to decide that.
Yeah. And I noticed a while ago you said we in mental health. You referenced it that way.
Yeah. I actually work for a nonprofit. I work in the marketing department. And we are in Ohio. We're one of the largest mental health and AOD, which is alcohol and other drugs recovery. We have some great social outreach programs. We have caseworkers. And we also have a really good school-based mental health program. They don't like you to talk about the name unless it's been pre-approved. The marketing department has to give it its blessings. That's the only reason I don't say the name on my program or anything else. I just don't want to create a problem. But I feel really good about the work we do. We're a nonprofit. I enjoy that culture. You know, I worked in the for-profit industry for most of my life. A lot of it was selling media. A lot of it was selling high-performance electronics. It was always that benchmark, you know, 90 days out, we got to hit this or you're all in big trouble, blah, blah, blah. And with a nonprofit, you know, you have to be, you know, financially responsible. You need the lights to come on. You need the people that are working for you to be able to earn a living. But at the end of the day, people are working at those places because they want to be in that work. They want to be helping people. They're not there to be rich. Some of our highly degreed people, which I am not, but a lot of the highly degreed people we have, people that have PhDs and all these other things that are working for us, those people can go out into the private sector and make a lot more money than what they make working for us. You know, they're there because they want to be. And some of our frontline counselors, when I get a chance to go out with them, we have a couple of caseworkers who work at a homeless shelter. And some of the things that they deal with people coming through the door who have been badly injured, there's cases where they've been shot at, the homeless people have, and they don't know how to access help. They don't know how to access healthcare. And it, what little money they might get from different programs, they blow. So these people have to try to help them manage their money so they have food throughout the month, you know, after they get some money. And a lot of these people that they're trying to help don't really appreciate the fact that they're trying, you know, they get mad because their money's being managed for them. And I could go on and on about this, but I can tell you those people that work in those offices are doing God's work. And I mean that sincerely, because those people are making the world a better place, because, you know, a lot of the people that come through there may or may not have the benefit of what you're doing for them. But that one out of 10, that one person who stops drinking, that one person who manages to get into a detox program and stay clean, and they go out and their children have their father, or their children have their mother, in which case they wouldn't have had had it not been for that healthcare worker, for that caseworker who's working for next to nothing in that little building. And those people are making the world a better place. And I can't speak highly enough about those people. I talk about making the world a better place for a living when I work, when I'm in the office there. But those people really do the heavy lifting. And I can tell you, I work for an organization. When I come home, I used to be worried about whether or not the company that I work for was going to hit its financial mark. And now I come home and I know that somewhere throughout our agency, one person has had their life turned around because of what they do, at least one. Mm-hmm. And that makes all the difference. I'm helping people who are affecting change and making the world a better place. Just to let your audience know, we're at the end of September. Suicide Awareness Month has been September. It's been a problem here in Ohio. We had a whole rash of suicides in the school system where I am at a couple of years ago. I mean, a bunch of them. It was bad. Mm-hmm. One right after the other, you know, 16, 15-year-old mm-hmm. kids. This is all part of getting back to what you were asking me about mental health, taking wellness breaks when you're at work. You know, if you need to go out to your car and turn on your favorite song and sit in your car for a while during your lunch break, do it. There's no saying that you have to sit at your desk. There's no reason why you have to maintain a conversation with your workers. Do whatever you need to do to give yourself that space. And taking a vacation doesn't always need to be a complicated vacation. You can go take a day off and just do nothing. Mm-hmm. Like you said, binge watch SVU if that's your thing. it's so important to have. We're starting to realize now the importance of wellness breaks, of having that in your life. Also in this last year, I've been a part of a diversity and inclusion group, mm-hmm. and I found that very educational, and I've also found it a good release to make new friends, hear about different experiences. These are all things that I would encourage everyone to do. It's great for your mental health, and it'll help your fellow man.
It's just really good being around people that, you know, either inspired by something. Mm-hmm. You know, it's obviously what that is more important than what I'm about to use as a reference, but you'll understand what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. You're watching a college basketball team. Two of those guys are going to go to the NBA and make millions, and the rest of them are going to be lawyers, doctors, and work in an office.
Yeah.
And so when you watch those people, the people that know that they're not going to the NBA, this is the last game. They're playing for the pure love of playing basketball.
Sure.
And so when you see somebody who has is inspired to help people, whether it be a law enforcement person, a first responder, mental health, they're not going into those fields thinking they're going to make seven figures. They know they're never going to make that. They're mm-hmm. there because they have a mission and a calling, and they know that. And mm-hmm. I always enjoy being around people that have a mission and a calling, no matter what the heck it is, as long as it's in a positive direction. Because it's just great to be around them and to see the effect that they have. You know, like you were saying, mm-hmm. someone who, children that regain their father, or it could be someone who doesn't have children, but then grows on to create wonderful kids from a healthy place. And then those kids have a healthy foundation, and they go off to be productive citizens and so on and so forth.
Yep.
And two or three generations, they don't even remember that grandpa, you know, had a problem at some point. They just are living on a positive trajectory, and they don't even realize that him going to that place or her going to that place was the reason and the catalyst to everything changing for the positive for the generations that go on in the mm-hmm. future. So, you know, there are people that have been helped that don't even know that the help existed at some point. So
absolutely.
It's like it flowers out, and it's an amazing thing, because I've seen certain things in my time, and you know, it's just there were times when I was part of it, and there were times when I just witnessed it. And I know what you're saying. It's a great thing to see, and it's an honor to be around people like that. That's how
absolutely
I feel about
it is. It sure is.
That's how I feel about it. So, my friend, before we let you go, I was wondering about this. How labor intensive is doing your show regarding? Because I'm always curious of how the spouses of the people that I talk to that have these, because mm-hmm. you essentially have three jobs. So, if I was to shake your hand, will I see stab wounds from your wife going, "That's enough"? Stab.
No. No. I got to say, I'm very lucky when it comes to my wife for a lot of reasons. Mm-hmm. She really encourages, the things that I do, because, you know, they've been a part of my life, and she knows I need that fulfillment. Mm-hmm. And I've also been very supportive of her. My wife was a angel when my mom was dying. Mm-hmm. My mom wanted to die at home, which we we know we had her do that. It was a process that took months. Mm. And I don't know that, you know, not every spouse in the world is going to deal with that. Mm. And she did. And I'm trying to do the same for her. Her father is doing pretty well, considering that he has Parkinson's. Mm. So, you know, we have to monitor him all the time. And, you know, he's not as critical as my mom was at the tail end there, but he needs help. And, you know, he needs help with navigating paperwork. And he's a veteran. So, you know, they have all kinds of forms for him to fill out all the time. And we are very supportive of each other in that regard. So I am very, very lucky to have the wife that I do. And I'm pretty sure she gets the most jabbing about me and my cat, Dexter, because everybody knows how much I love my cat. That's the question everybody asks my wife. Where do you rank in comparison to the cat? She's very supportive, and I'm very, very lucky. And I got to say, too, she's a smart cookie. She's got her own career. Mm-hmm. She's highly skilled at what she does. And of course, her job is very time consuming, and I never make her feel bad about having to work as opposed to getting home on time or anything like that, because I know how it feels to have that done to me. And we don't do that to each other. So to answer your question, I'm very lucky. It is labor intensive. The podcast can be, mm-hmm. Especially when I'm approached from a publisher about doing an author, because I have to get familiar with the book. You know, I have to, you know, study their bio. They send me press kits, and it can take a long time to sort through all that, mm-hmm. and then schedule it, and then record it and edit it. And actually the speaking part of it is only a small sliver of it, but mm-hmm. yeah, it can be time consuming. But in the end, when you sit back and you see it go out into the world, you know, that's what makes it fun. And I'm sure you can understand that.
Oh, so, yeah. Yeah. I got books stacking up like that. Mm-hmm. You know, I keep forgetting sometimes that I'm going to get a book in the mail.
Yeah.
What is this? Oh, that's right. Yeah. It's happened a couple of times. Now, one last thing. Sure. Your wife is understanding, but let's be honest. I have to understand. Mm-hmm. Is Dexter understanding, or do you get a couple of scratches in the face when the catnip's a little slow?
Yeah, you know, the answer is he likes wires, so he's not allowed in the studio because he's just a little too fond of wires. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times when I come out, he's right by the door, and he and I play this little game. He kind of tries to dart in, you know, and he does it real cute. And one time when I cracked the door open to look to see if he was in the hallway, he became aware of that. So he went around the corner, and I opened the door a little bit. Nope, he's not out there. And I started to walk out, and he came around the corner and dashed in. So yeah, he's a fun cat. He puts up with me too. Everybody does. I'm very lucky.
Why have you not recorded that and put it on TikTok, damn
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I probably should have. You're right. Yeah.
I'll go, and all of a sudden you go, I had 1,000 followers. I got 8.7 million overnight. What the heck?
Yes, yes. I have used them. There's been a couple of videos that I have put on there, and my Facebook friends are worthless. I could put on there that I just found a cure for cancer and nobody would say anything, but I put a picture of Dexter on there and there's like, you know, a ton of reactions. Mm-hmm. So yeah, he definitely knows how to get clicks when he's on Facebook. I'll give him that. And I heard a statistic somewhere. I'm not sure what the number was, but it was enormous. It was like over half of the pictures that have been put on Facebook servers have been cats and dogs too, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. So I think people just love that animals in general, and that's a good thing.
Okay, I'm going to buy 6 cats now.
Yeah.
All right, my good friend. Before we go, let everybody know. Obviously, I will link all of your stuff in the and of course in the bio.
Great.
In the notes, but let them know in an audio form where they can find you and what you want them to know, my friend.
Sure, I'll tell you what. Probably the easiest thing to do, and if you don't know, you don't have to have Twitter to check out somebody on Twitter. You do have to have an account to interact with somebody on Twitter. But if you just Google Billy D's, B-I-L-L-Y-D-E-E-S, if you just Google that and Twitter, my account comes up. There's a lot of results you will get. And in my Twitter bio and in a lot of other my social media, I have a little link tree. You can find the podcast on pretty much all the major podcasting networks, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all those. And like I said, Twitter is kind of like my social media home. And my screen name is always Billy D. So Billy D's on YouTube, Billy D's, you know, wherever. And you can search me out anywhere. And I'm always happy to take a tweet. Just be nice. That's what I always tell people. It's okay to disagree. Yeah. Just be nice. Okay.
And I want to say before we, in closing, to the audience, for Billy D's and for me, you're welcome for us smooth voicing you to death for an hour.
Yes, absolutely. You've got the voice, man. You've got the voice.
Billy, I was talking about both of us, actually. So I just want to say,
Yeah, sure.
To the audience, I just want to say, listen, you're welcome. Okay. That's all awesome. I got to say. Well, that's it. They used to be messing with them. It's not a big deal.
Yeah. Okay, good. You know, that's something that you and I just have. And I think we hit the right register. It's kind of a misnomer that to be a good voiceover person, you have to have a real deep voice. Like, that's not necessarily true. Most of the most successful people, like Morgan Freeman and all those people, they have really rich and mid-tones. They have that real nice, soft mid-tone presence. And you have that. And people tell me I have it. I hope I do. And yes, it's good for our business. Voices that are really, really deep are good for, like, the guy who says rated R, you know, at the end of a scary movie. Yeah, they have the guy go rated R. But they're good for that. But if you're on the radio and you're listening to this guy for a couple hours, that can start to wear you down. So yes, the soft smoothness is something that's very valued, and you are a practitioner of that. And I really appreciate that.
And Andy Dufresne would like to say the same thing. for the young people, that was a Shawshank Redemption reference. Right?
Yes.
Okay, Billy, much love to you. Thank you for coming on, man. Thank you. As always, a pleasure to talk to you. I look forward to talking to you again.
Absolutely. And I'll have to have you on my show sometime soon. Thank you very much for having me. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
All right, my brother. Take care. And I appreciate you. Thank you.
Thank you. You're very welcome. Thank you.
All right, everybody. Thank you very, very much for listening to another show. All the new listeners that are coming on, I want to thank you for coming and hanging out. All the people that have been listening to me for the whole time, once again, much love to you all. The family is growing, and I love every last one of you. If you love this show, and you did, do me a favor, rate and review this podcast on whatever podcatcher you're playing. 17 stars, please. Okay? If you haven't subscribed, make sure that you do. And tell a friend to tell a friend to tell a friend about the podcast, okay? Much love to you all. We'll see you again next time. I appreciate you. I love every last one of yous, and we're going to have more fun in the future. Thank you, and I'll see you next time, my friends. Take care.